How do we figure out what candidates to vote for? How do we find out what they really think? Find out next on Gospel of Life. Hello, this is Father Frank Pavone, Director of Gospel of Life Ministries. Welcome to our program. We're joined by Janet Morana, our Associate Director. And Janet, in an election year, the key question on so many people's minds is, how do I figure out who to vote for, and how do I find out what these candidates really think about the issues?
Well, you know, the big danger we have this year, Father, is that so many, we've had such a long primary season, and so the media have, for the past year really has saturated people about the election and candidates. But I think the danger here is that some people are going to just tune out. We want them as Christians tuned in and to understand that as a Christian, they have a duty to vote, an obligation to vote.
Well, recently I gave a teaching about some of the ways that we sort through what the most important questions are for us to ask about the candidates and to ask of the candidates. So why don't we look at that teaching segment now, and then we will offer you even more resources for sorting through the issues in this year's elections. Brothers and sisters, we find ourselves in another election year. And it can be a time of confusion for a lot of people as we try to sort out the issues, sort out the candidates, decide for whom we're going to cast our vote. And not only whom we're going to cast our vote for, but also for whom we're going to work. Because elections take a lot of effort on the part of a lot of people to put particular candidates into office and to keep other candidates out of office. It really is a contest not simply between the candidates, but between their teams, because it takes a team to elect a candidate. Many volunteers, many workers, many who are going to sacrifice a lot of time and a lot of effort to make that candidate known, to make the candidate's positions known, and to rally the support and the donors and the workers who are going to be able to build up enough votes for that candidate. Some people will distribute literature. Other people will help to spread the candidate's message in other ways, or organize rallies, or simply influence other voters to support that particular candidate. What kind of questions should we be asking about the candidates in order to assess whether or not they deserve our vote? That's what we want to explore in today's segment. Before we get to the question of the specific issues that we should be most focused on, and it's important to say from the outset that there are many different issues of interest to the people and of importance to that candidate's office, all of these issues we need to pay attention to. But before we get into specific issues, there's one overriding question that we need to grapple with, and that is, what kind of authority does the candidate think that we are giving to him or her when we put them in public office? In other words, what is their view of public office itself? And when we elect them to a government position, what kind of government do they think we have? These are the more fundamental questions that we have to engage in with the candidate so that we make sure we're talking about the same kind of government and the same sort of, quote, power that they are receiving by winning the election. What this really boils down to is the relationship between government and human rights. And here we're really getting to the very deepest foundations of what politics and government are all about. All of us are human beings. We have certain human rights, and a human right is a right that we have because we're human. In other words, we have it automatically just by being human. We don't have it because somebody in government power decided to give it to us. Your life, for example, is protected. Why? Because some Congress or court or president decided that it should be protected? Or is it because you're human? And human beings have the right to have their lives protected. Of course, it's the latter. You are human, And your right to life springs from your humanity, not from the fact that somebody else in their generosity of spirit happened to decide that today you should be granted protection. So what is the relationship between government and human rights? Our Declaration of Independence addresses this question and says that we are endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, and that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. Notice what the Declaration says about the relationship between government and human rights. The human rights are bestowed by the Creator, who makes us human, and the government exists to secure those rights, to put a protective fence around them, so to speak, so that nobody can decide to take away what the Creator himself gave. So the relationship between government and human rights is, government is to protect them, and it can't tamper with them. It can't edit or delete or dilute. That's the proper relationship. Now, in the history of the human family, there have been governments that have come along that have tried to see themselves as the source of those rights and, in fact, have claimed the authority wrongfully of trying to take those rights away. And this is where we end up with holocausts and genocide and tyrannical regimes that human history has rightly judged to be offensive, intolerable, and simply wrong. You can't have a government that thinks it has the power of life and death over its citizens, or the power to take away their human rights, to take away, for example, as happens in so many parts of the world, the right to religious liberty, to practice and believe as one feels is best, or basic other rights to the basic necessities of life or of life itself. Here, of course, in our government, in the United States of America, we have transgressed a fundamental duty of government by allowing the destruction of life by abortion. Because the first purpose of government is the protection of the lives of its citizens. And by abortion, government is denying the most fundamental right of its citizens, which is life itself. So in this relationship between government and human rights, abortion is what is the fundamental example in our times of what destroys that proper relationship, so that government now thinks that it is the source of those human rights rather than only their protector. So the first question for any candidate, what type of government do we have and what is its relationship to human rights? This question cannot be answered just by looking at any of the many issues that a candidate may be discussing, because not all issues go this deep to this fundamental relationship. Most issues that candidates debate, whether it's about education or housing, health care, or even national security, have to do with particular policies that they are arguing should or should not be enacted. The topic of immigration, for example. What is the best way to both ensure our domestic security and at the same time to respect the human rights of the people who have come into our country by whatever means they happened to come? How do we ensure respect for the law and respect for people who may technically be breaking the law? It's a very big question, and there are a lot of different particular policies that people may argue for or against. Or the issue of crime, for example. We want to have crime-free neighborhoods. Well, how do we do that? People are going to disagree about the particular policies and programs that should be put into place in order to reduce crime. But notice, when it comes to these disputes, what the question is that's being disputed. The question that's being disputed is, how do we reduce crime? The question is not being disputed is there a right to commit crime? Now, that's going to a more fundamental level. Should we be for crime or against it? That's not what the candidates are arguing about. What they're arguing about is, given the obvious principle that people's rights have to be protected and therefore we have to be against crime, given the obvious fact that crime is wrong, we all agree on that, How do we then reduce it? That's a very different kind of argument from an argument that would say, well, let's argue about whether or not we do have a right to crime. Brothers and sisters, whether it's reducing crime or reducing child abuse or reducing unemployment or reducing poverty, most of the political arguments are about how do we best implement a particular principle. But there are some questions, and some of them are disputed between the political candidates, that go deeper to the level of principle itself. And when we talk, for example, about the question of whether children have the right to life while they're still in their mother's wombs, whether they should be protected or killed, in that case, the policy is the principle. The policy that says that these lives should be protected is, in fact, the principle that human life is to be protected. It's the principle that should be at the heart of every policy. It's the principle at the heart of every issue of social justice and human rights. On the other hand, a policy that says that the children in the womb can be destroyed by abortion breaks the principle. It's not a question of a better or a worse implementation of a principle on which we all agree. It's a breaking of the principle. It's a denial of the principle. And that's why the arguments and the candidates' positions over abortion are much more fundamental than their positions on anything else. And that's not at all to say that we are free to ignore the other issues. We aren't. It's to say that there's a principle at the heart of every issue and that abortion breaks that principle. And so when we want to understand where a candidate really stands, here are some of the questions we have to ask. What will this candidate do to protect unborn children? Now notice, that question that we have to ask is not saying, what do you believe about it, or what is your view? Because candidates can be very effective in their rhetoric about how pro-life they are, or how much in favor of human rights they might be, or they even may say, well, I want to see the numbers of abortions go down. It's not so important to us what the candidate believes as what the candidate is committed to do. The proper question, again, is what will the candidate do to protect unborn children? There are other critical issues here which go to the very question of the role of government. And therefore, a second question to ask when you're evaluating candidates is, what will the candidate do to protect marriage? Because marriage, as created by God, is between one man and one woman. What will the candidate do to protect marriage when it is under attack in our society as a creation of human desire and human choice alone, and therefore could be a man and a man or a woman and a woman? Third key question, what is the candidate's position on the role of judges? And we mention this because in the structure of government, we're privileged to have a government where we govern ourselves. People, through their elected representatives, can in fact and do create the laws. And yet, if a candidate looks at judges and thinks that they can recreate laws or uncreate them when the people have in fact created them by what we call judicial activism, then they really don't believe in the type of government that we have, going back again to our original question. What kind of government, what kind of power do you think we're giving you by putting you in political office? Now, the question that arises, of course, is how do we find out what the candidate's positions are? Let me give you some concrete guidance on that. First of all, what is the candidate's voting record? Many of the candidates who are running for public office already hold public office. And if they already hold public office, they have a voting record on particular issues or pieces of legislation. And that voting record is public information. So you can find out what it is. If you go to gospeloflife.com/legislation, you'll be able to look up the voting records of all the major candidates. Secondly, what is their sponsorship and co-sponsorship of various bills? Because if you look at the kind of legislation that they've sponsored or co-sponsored, you get a pretty good idea of their position on key issues. A third question to ask about candidates is, from whom have they received endorsements? Because knowing the kind of people and organizations who endorse a particular candidate tells you a lot about that candidate and their positions. A fourth question, what party does the candidate identify with, and what is the platform of that party? Understand what the parties stand for, and you will understand more about the candidate and the implications of electing that candidate. And finally, what do the candidates say and not say in their speeches and interviews? Now, understand that this question cannot stand by itself, because rhetoric alone is not going to get you to the truth of the matter. You have to see how they actually voted, or what they sponsored, or who endorsed them. But what they say or what they don't say is very important, and you have to pay a little extra attention to what they're not saying in order to get to their true positions. We will have at our gospeloflife.com website information on how you can assess these various aspects of a candidate's positions and where you can find more information as well. But these are some of the critically important elements to thinking through carefully whom we're going to support, not only with our vote, but with our hard work, with our promotion, with our donations, with our efforts to either get someone into office, or we can use our vote simply to keep somebody worse out of office. In any case, let's participate in an active and informed way. Well, friends, we ask that you will spread the information that you just heard, and Janet, I think many people will find this analysis helpful, together with the special election-related website that we've put together called politicalresponsibility.org.
That's right. That's the one place they can go for up-to-the-minute, basically, information, because as it becomes available, we keep updating that site. But in addition, Father, if people like your teaching, we've put that in a handy little booklet called Voting with a Clear Conscience. All the principles you laid out here are laid out. And this is a great resource, really, to have for your church family. I suggest that people order these from our Gospel of Life online store. Mm-hmm. It should be in the back of the church so that, and encourage people. And if you have a Bible study program, you really could 1 week go through this little booklet and see, you know, how to vote and help people realize that this is really a Christian obligation and we have to do it in the right way.
Well, I was talking a lot in this talk we just saw about the questions we ask the candidates, how to find out their positions. But in this booklet, there are actually 10 different principles or steps, you might say, to getting to the point where when we go to sleep on election night, we've got a clear conscience. We've got peace of mind, knowing we've done the right thing to the best of our ability to know what that is.
That's right.
Well, we also want to share with our viewers and listeners the some of the upcoming travels of our pastoral team. We have Dr. Teresa Burke will be in Central Valley, New York on the 19th of July for the Hudson Valley Catholic Conference. I'll be in Auburn Hills, Michigan for a keynote speaker at a pro-life garden party on the afternoon of the 20th, Sunday the 20th of July. And then later in the month, we've got actually the beginning of August, August 1st, I'll be heading out to Wichita, Kansas, the Midwest Catholic Family Conference, at which I'll be speaking that weekend. And you're going to Hawaii next month for various speaking in the Diocese of Honolulu from August the 9th to the 21st.
That's right. So I hope that our viewers can maybe meet us, ourselves or one of our pastoral team in person and hear us speak.
Yes, and if you don't live in any of those places we mentioned, check out our website for the other locations of the many travels of our many pastoral associates. Now stay with us. After this break, we'll have our action segment.
There is a crisis in America, a Holocaust that takes the lives of more than 3,000 children every day through the horrific act of abortion. Yet despite this tragic loss, we are gaining victory over this culture of death. In the last 12 years, half of the nation's freestanding abortion clinics have closed, and the abortion industry is on the run. Gospel of Life Ministries has played a vital role in the rescue of countless children and is currently in place to save thousands more. But we urgently need your support to make this happen. Not everyone can be on the front line of this battle, but when you support Gospel of Life, you are saving lives. Your life-saving gift of $25, $50, or $100 will help us provide alternatives to women who think they have no choice but abortion. And for those countless women who have lost children to abortion, Gospel of Life Ministries will help them find forgiveness, healing, and peace in the cross of Christ, and become outspoken advocates for the lives of their unborn children. The help you provide will also bring the saving word of life to churches through a training program that is raising a mass voice that will see abortion stopped. With your gift of $25, we'll send you the booklet, Pro-Life, Today and Always. It will give you an overview of why we are pro-life and provide reflections that will stir and motivate you to action. With your gift of $50, we'll also send you the DVD, The Procedure. In this powerful DVD, you'll hear abortionists discuss the procedure in their own words and unmask the violence that the abortion industry tries to hide. And when you give a gift of $100, we'll also include the book, Forbidden Grief. This compelling book will open your eyes to the psychological damage done to those who have had an abortion experience. Please call, write, or make your gift online today.
Welcome to our action segment. Janet, we want to talk about helping the churches be more active during this election season. And there's a lot that churches can do in order to promote the civic responsibility of the members of their congregations.
That's right. Well, the first thing to do is to challenge your congregation, making sure that everyone is registered to vote.
Yes.
And you can do this by having voter registration at the end of your Sunday service. On a specific Sunday, you tell them ahead of time, you have the forms there, and you basically challenge everybody to stop at the table on their way out of church if they're not registered to vote.
Yeah, some churches have them available every Sunday. Why not? This is a basic aspect of people participating in the renewal of society, which the gospel calls us to work for. So, yes, nonpartisan voter registration, sure, which means that we're not favoring any particular party or position when we register the voters, but rather giving an open opportunity to anyone and everyone who's eligible to register to do so.
That's right. And they can obtain these forms by going to our website because, you know, from state to state, they sometimes differ a little bit.
Sure,
and it's politicalresponsibility.org where they can download the actual forms and get all the information to do voter registration. And also on our website, they can see particular Sundays we've designated as voter registration Sunday, because the idea here is that if many churches in the same community are doing a voter registration on a particular Sunday, it kind of gets a little bit more momentum going in that community.
Yes, that's right. Now, churches, as well as activating people to be able to vote by registering them, can also educate the voters on the candidates and the issues. Now, when it comes to issues, churches have maximum freedom. We're always teaching and preaching about issues. And the fact that the issues might be issues that divide political candidates in an election does not in any way, shape, or form mean that the church has to stop talking about them. Quite the opposite. The church needs to talk about them. The church can even educate the members of the congregation about where do the candidates stand on the issues. Now, there are certain requirements, but basically a church can issue, for example, the candidate's voting records. That's right. Public information. And if a candidate already holds public office, they have a voting record, the church can make that known. Secondly, the church can issue comparison pieces, voter guides, again, as long as they're nonpartisan, which means that the voter guide cannot indicate the church's preference for or against the candidate or for or against a position. So it has to be, in that sense, neutral. But if it is, the church is certainly in a position to be able to educate its members on where the candidates stand.
Well, you know, one of the reasons why pastors are afraid to do the things we just mentioned is they're afraid of getting in trouble with the IRS. So I want to encourage people to contact us for this great booklet we had. We had a symposium, a legal symposium, and we have a booklet that gives you all the, really backs up the information from legal experts why churches can do the things we're saying.
Yes, and brothers and sisters at politicalresponsibility.org, not only can you find that legal symposium, but pastors can find free legal advice and information on how to get it regarding any of their planned political responsibility activities. Well, now, friends, we're going to look at the aborted babies, and let's meditate on this violence and how we can stop it.
You were looking at the face of an unborn child, 25 and a half weeks into pregnancy. This child can be legally killed by abortion in America. As this ad from the Yellow Pages proves, some abortion clinics sell abortions up to 28 weeks. Abortion kills living children whose hearts are beating and whose bodily organs are all in place. Abortion, haven't we gone too far?
When I found out I was pregnant, I thought I would lose my job.
My boyfriend told me to choose between him and the baby.
I worried about staying in school.
I was already struggling to care for one child.
My parents told me I wasn't ready to be a mom, so I had an abortion.
I had physical problems afterwards.
I went from relationship to relationship.
I hated myself.
I started to have nightmares.
I cried when I saw a pregnant woman.
I tried to commit suicide.
Couldn't bond with the child I later had.
I tried to numb my pain with alcohol.
I struggled with depression.
I had trouble conceiving again.
You see, abortion didn't solve our problems.
It just created different ones.
Each of us thought we were the only ones struggling afterward.
Now we realize many women regret their choice.
That's why we are silent no more.
We found help in healing, and you can too. Call or go online today.
There is a crisis in America, a Holocaust that takes the lives of more than 3,000 children every day through the horrific act of abortion. Yet despite this tragic loss, we are gaining victory over this culture of death. With your gift of $25, we'll send you the booklet, Pro-Life, Today and Always. It will give you an overview of why we are pro-life and provide reflections that will stir and motivate you to action. With your gift of $50, we'll also send you the DVD, The Procedure. In this powerful DVD, you'll hear abortionists discuss the procedure in their own words and unmask the violence that the abortion industry tries to hide. And when you give a gift of $100, we'll also include the book, Forbidden Grief. This compelling book will open your eyes to the psychological damage done to those who have had an abortion experience. Please call, write, or make your gift online today. Made possible by the supporters of Gospel of Life Ministries and Priests for Life. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of stopping abortion and providing post-abortion healing. Specific outreaches mentioned are examples of the programs conducted and supported. Gifts are considered to be without use restriction unless specifically stipulated by the donor.